is the Phantom from the World Wide Web. Welcome to Phantom Radio, presented by the Kegel Company, the number one lane maintenance company in the world. He worked in the PBA road staff for 14 years, first as press director, then as assistant national tour director. Then he had the unenviable task of following Harry Golden as a national tournament director. He's an award-winning bowling writer who has been writing about the sport for more than 40 years. And he's written for the Bowlers Journal International, Bowling Digest, and he also has a bowling blog called Spare Change. And he's been the bowling columnist for the Peoria Journal Star for the past 17 years. He's also on the board of directors for the International Bowling Media Association, and he just received the prestigious IBMA Luby Hall of Fame Award at Bowl Expo last summer. So please say hello to our good friend, Johnny Campos. Hello, Jeremy, and welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Phantom. It's great to be back with you. Follow your show pretty much every week. Thanks for inviting me to be on your show once again.
Wow, you're so interesting, and you got so many facts and things that we like to talk about, and I love talking with you about bowling parts. You got a great memory, and your sense of history is unbelievable, but I guess we can still say Happy New Year, and I really appreciate you taking the time to be here with us again this week on Phantom Radio, and as I said in the opening, it's always great to have you here with us, and as usual, I have a lot to talk with you about, so let's get right to it. So, are you ready for this?
Sure, Phantom. Ask me whatever you want.
You know, I want to start with something that I mentioned in the opening, and that was your blog, Spare Change. How do we get to take a look at that? Where the heck is it?
Well, it's connected. You know, I work for the Peoria Journal Star. That's where I have my weekly column. And on their website, pjstar.com, you can just, there's like a search function on there, you know, the little magnifying glass, and you can just do a search for Spare Change on there, and it'll, or there's a menu bar on the left, and you can, you can drop it down, and it blogs, there's a link for blogs, and it'll take it to where the Journal Star blogs are.
All right, cool, because I've had a few people send me emails after your last couple of shows, and they want to know where it is, and I got it once, and I couldn't find it the last time. I don't know, but anyway.
I usually post my blogs on Facebook anyway and put a link on it to anybody that follows me on Facebook or on Twitter. They can also get it that way.
Yeah, I think that's how I found it last time on Facebook, yeah. All right, Bards. Well, as I mentioned earlier, you always come up with something interesting to talk about on the show, so I've been wondering a lot, lady, about what you have ready for us this time.
Well, how about, since this is one of the first shows of the year, how about talking about a noteworthy performance that brings back memories of some of the great tournaments of years past? How does that sound?
Oh, man, that sounds great. As you know, I love the history of our game, and I like to look back a ways. And like I said, you got a great memory, so why don't you give us an example?
All right, the one I'm thinking about, Liz Johnson. Just became the second female to win a PBA national title, joining the great Kelly Kulick. Liz won the Chameleon Championship on the PBA Tour recently, and is that noteworthy enough? Some people are already calling her the GOAT, the greatest of all time, and she's a shoo-in to win her third straight IBMA Bowler of the Year award for the women and seventh overall. She had another fantastic season in 2017. She never seems to age. She won the Women's U.S. Open for the fourth straight year and for the sixth time overall. And since the resurgence of the Professional Women's Bowling Association in 2015, Liz has been the only Player of the Year winner for that organization. She was the first woman to make a national telecast on the men's tour and the first woman to win a PBA regional title. She has a great resume against the men.
She can definitely bowl. I've watched her bowl many, many tournaments, and a bunch of them against some men, and she seems like she's always in the hunt. But, you know, there's been some other great bowlers down the road in the past. You mentioned Kelly Kulick, but how about some other ones? You got a few more examples of the great ones?
Oh, sure. I mean, most bowling fans of today have probably heard about the more recent, the current stars like Kulick and Stephanie Johnson, Shannon O'Keefe, Shannon Bluchowski, and even the international players, Clara Guerrero, Rocio Restrepo from Colombia down there, just to name a few. But when the former women's tour folded, some of the women who dominated might have been forgotten by bowling fans today. Some of them are still bowling in the current tour or, you know, in senior tournaments, senior Team USA. And these are Leanne Hulzenberg. And when I first met her, she was Leanne Barrett before marrying former PBA touring pro Gary Hulzenberg. And, of course, you got Carolyn Doran Ballard, who married Del Ballard Jr. You got Tish Johnson. Anne-Marie Dugan still bowled on the women's tour. Linda Barnes, who was mostly an amateur standout. But I went to the Wayback Machine and took it back a few more years. Some of the other bowlers I remember, you got Wendy McPherson, Jeannie Nakarado, used to be Jeannie Maiden, Leila Wagner, a former beauty queen who was a really good bowler, Carol Giannotti from Australia, the great lefty Alita Sill, Nikki Giannoulias, Donna Adamek, Kim Adler, of course, Cindy Coburn Carroll, Cheryl Daniels, Dee Dee Davidson, and the great Lisa Rathgeber Wagner. And going back even further, you have Pam Buckner, Betty Morris, who's now Betty Morris Lobb, Paula Sperber Carter, Patty and Pat Costello, Cheryl Robinson, Shirley Garms, and of course, Judy Sutar, Laverne Carter, and the great Marion Ladwig. Wow. And I'm sure I've forgotten some of them, but my apologies, but I'm sure many current bowling fans have no idea who some of these women are or how good they really were.
Oh, man, I'm telling you what, Johnny, you've raised the hairs on my arm. I was jotting down a couple names of the older timers, and I hate to say older timers, but the first time I saw Leanne Barrett, man, I thought, oh, my God. She's in there playing the fourth arrow with the men, and she's beating them. And then there was Wendy McPherson. You know, I saw her as a young 17-year-old over here in the Bay Area, and she was awesome. And I also saw Paula Sperber back in Miami when she was just a teenager. And I got to tell you, I think one of the greatest of all time was Lisa Wagner, man. She could
bowl.
She could bowl.
Yep. Yes, she could. She was awesome.
Yeah, but that list you gave is unbelievable. You know, I got to ask you about how far back you go. How about, what was her name, McCutcheon, back in the 20s?
That was a little before my time, Phantom. I'm not that old.
I saw a couple of pictures of her, and without any disrespect, I would have hated to see her in a dark alley someplace. She was bigger than me, I think, but she could bowl.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Johnny, I need you to hang on for a minute or two. I need to tell our listeners about this month's Storm Bowling Trivia Contest, okay?
Sure, I'll be right here waiting for you.
Okay, Phantom fans, this week we're going to have another one of our popular Storm Bowling Trivia Contests. And as you know, we have a Storm Bowling Trivia Contest every month, and we award a lot of great prizes. And this contest will go for 1 week, so you'll have to submit your answer to me before midnight on Sunday, February 4th, to be eligible to win. And remember, these monthly contests are open to Phantom Fan Club members only. Okay, the January Storm Bowling Trivia Contest question is, what is the name of our guest's Johnny Campost bowling blog? Well, we mentioned this earlier in the show, so if you missed it, simply go back and listen again. It's just that easy. And remember, you must send me that answer before midnight on Sunday, February 4th. So please be sure to send your answer to me at saveoursport@yahoo.com. Now, that's the abbreviation for Save Our Sport, which is SAVRSPRT@yahoo.com. And remember, you must be a Phantom Fan Club member to participate. So join today. Okay, Johnny, we're back in that short break, and I remember an event called the Cambridge Merit Mixed Doubles Tournament that was held back in Las Vegas. And some of the great women bowlers that people might have forgotten, but I'm sure you remember that tournament. And if so, How about some of those top women bowlers back then, almost 30 years ago? I know you've already mentioned some of them, but have you forgotten any? Have you thought of any of the new ones that we haven't mentioned yet?
Well, you know, I was fortunate enough to work with the women's tour directors to co-administer those mixed doubles events. They started in Reno and moved down to Vegas eventually. And these were big tournaments. I mean, they had $200,000 prize funds. $40,000 went to the winning duo. So, I mean, they pay more than some of the tournaments today. Alida Sill, the lefty I mentioned, was one of the top women every year in those events, and she just about made a career out of them. She won three of them.
Wow.
And players from both tours, they would pair up to form some of the most formidable mixed doubles teams in the history of the sport. And for these tournaments, there was no TV finals. It was just, you know, you bowled your qualifying games, they paired them up, and then you bowl 24 games of match play. And they started in 1989, almost 30 years ago, and originally sponsored by Cambridge. And the players from each tour, as I mentioned, they would qualify individually, and then they'd be paired up 1-1, 2-2 for match play competition. And as I mentioned, there were some amazing doubles teams that came out of there. You had Amleto Monticelli and Tish Johnson. They won the first two. You had Mark Baker, Nikki Giannoulias, Parker Bone III with Lisa Wagner, Randy Peterson with Donna Adamek, Marshall Holman with Wendy McPherson. So, I mean, just unbelievable duos that came out of these tournaments.
Wow, yeah, again, you've brought back a lot of great memories. You know, later on, there was another cigarette company, I think it was Philip Morris. They also had a doubles tournament with some of the top stars. Can you remember who they were?
Well, Philip Morris, I mean, after Cambridge, Merritt was one of the, what the took over sponsorship, and then there was a couple of years break, and then Philip Morris did take over the event starting in 1997, and they had it for a couple of more seasons, but to be honest, I wasn't around for those. That was after my time on the PBA staff, so I really have no memory of them at all. I watched the shows on TV, but I don't remember much of what happened. I know Philip Morris was a great sponsor. I actually used to work for Philip Morris when they owned the Miller Brewing Company. I worked for Miller for about 18 months in the late 80s, and I know they had deep pockets, so that was a great sponsor to have. But the tournaments they hosted that I remember, it was a great opportunity to see some of the best men and women pros bowl together and form some of the super doubles teams over the years.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's kind of a shame that we lost those sponsors, but I go back to the early 70s when Winston-Salem was a big sponsor. And in fact, the tournament was in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and I still remember in contact with people that worked in that bowling center back then. It was huge, but you know, we lost those sponsors, we lost the liquor sponsors, and it's really kind of a shame that what's happened over the years with that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You hate to see that happen. One of the nice things that's happening is PBA going back to Riviera Lanes this year. I thought that was a great move on their part.
Oh, man, I'll tell you what. Remember that sign over the door? I'm going to ask you about your memory. What did that sign say?
I believe it says, "Through these doors walk the greatest bowlers in the world."
Wow, I knew you'd know that part.
I used to see it several times a day when I was down there.
You know, I made a little check mark here. Every time you've been on the show several times, and every time I mentioned that you had the unenviable job of following Harry Golden as the tournament director. But, Johnny, I got to tell you that you made your own mark out there with your own style, and you got respect from all the players. And as a matter of fact, I remember you were instrumental in a few rule changes back in the day. I know we've talked about it before, but which one rule change that you were instrumental on back in the day are you the most proud of?
Probably the one that the players appreciated the most was when you bowl on the wrong lane. The USBC rule is it's a dead ball. You just bowl again on the correct lane. But a lot of the bowlers were doing it when they were coming from the high end of the house to the low end of the house, because, as you know, a lot of times houses play different on depending on which part of the house you bowl in. Mm-hmm. And then we bowled in some big centers, like, you know, Woodland Bowl, 80-lane centers, or the old Showboat. And so when the bowlers would come from the high end to the low end, I'd get called down so many times on the low end. Some guy bowled on the wrong lane. So, boom, they get a free practice shot, basically. Mm-hmm. So I came up with a solution, and it passed. I think it was unanimous. There might have been one bowler that didn't vote for this on the tournament committee, but I said that if you bowl on the wrong lane and you strike, then you have to take the shot over on the correct lane. But if you don't strike, then it counts. So then that would make them pay a little more attention to where they were bowling, because if they left the big four or washout, they knew they weren't going to get that shot over. And I think it was a fair rule, and even if guys honestly made that mistake, it would still make them realize what they were doing and maybe pay a little more attention the next time.
Yeah, that was a great rule, because like you said, I think a lot of them were sneaking in a little extra practice shot, knowing that, you know, they weren't going to get penalized at all. But the thing that I wondered about, and I kind of forgot, is if they did leave a spare, did they still bowl the same rotation on that lane, even though they started on the wrong lane?
They would have to bowl their second frame on the same lane.
Ah, okay.
They would go to the regular rotation. They would just have to bowl twice there.
Okay, cool. That was a great one, Pards. And like I said, you came up with a lot of them, and we've mentioned them before, but I got about a minute or two left, and I want to give you the stage. Is there anything you want to bring up? Is there anything I might have missed asking you? You got it, Pards. Go for it.
Well, next month, the PBA is celebrating its 60th anniversary. And I'm fortunate enough, I'm going to be going down there to Woodland Bowl in Indianapolis for the Go Bowling PBA 60th Anniversary Classic. And my son Andre and I will be there for the 60th Anniversary and Hall of Fame celebration. Can't wait to do it. I was on the committee that selected the 60 most memorable moments in the PBA's first 60 years. So it should be a great time down there.
All right. Well, you know, I was also contacted about, you know, making the top 60 moments in the PBA history. And it was a tough one because they gave you 100 of them and you had to pare it down to 60. That was pretty tough. But, you know, the one that I thought was the most important moment in PBA history was when Eddie Elias brought everybody together. The PBA formed in 1958, and then they started in 1959. So I think that was the biggest moment. Well, how about you?
Well, I made it kind of personal. The moment I chose number one was Pete McCordick shooting 300 in the TV finals at Gable House down in Torrance. And I knew Pete. You know, he's from Houston, I'm from Austin, so we were kind of junior bowlers together, but he and his brother, Paul, were just miles ahead of our guys, and just seeing him just shaking on the lanes, that's just an unforgettable moment to me. He was the first guy that won the $100,000 for shooting 300 on TV, so it got national exposure, and like I said, he was a friend of mine, so that to me will always be my number one memory for the PBA Tour.
Boy, it's a vivid memory in my mind, too. I can still see him with his arms, both of them up pointing to the sky, and he was still shaking. And
oh, my God.
He was a wonderful guy. I still miss seeing him around. But anyway, Johnny, we're out of time for this week, and I can't believe how quickly the time flies in this show. And it's probably why they say it's the fastest show in all of sports, but I really appreciate you being on with us, and I want you to be available because I'm going to have you on again in the near future. We'll go over some more stuff, and everybody likes what you talk about, especially me. So you stay available and keep up the good work, and I look forward to talking to you again soon, somewhere down the road.
Sounds good, Phantom. Looking forward to it.
All right, Johnny. Well, Phantom fans, that's going to wrap up another show for this week, and hope that y'all enjoyed it. Enjoyed hearing from Johnny Campos. We look forward to talking to all of you again next week. We'll have yet another interesting guest to talk to. In closing, we sincerely want to thank our sponsors, ElitePro Bowling.com, Storm Bowling Products, and Brad Edelman from High Roller fame, and a shout-out to our good friend Dave Kowalski for their valued and continued support of our show. We appreciate all that they do to keep us coming back to you each and every week. So for Phantom Radio, this is the Phantom.